Welcome to the Chronic Podcast with host Ralph Malbro and featuring bloggers Andrew Juge of SaintsNation.com, Kevin Held of Extreme Drops the Ball, and Dave Cariello of Canal Street Chronicles. This podcast is nothing but serious football talk and hardcore analysis.
Bing! Take that to the bank. LB. Those are the only letters that matter because the Saints are hemorrhaging linebackers.
Kevin's gonna get his horse steroid.
Now here's your host, Ralph Malbro.
And welcome to the Chronic Podcast. I'm your host, Ralph Malbro. As always, we're brought to you by the Pelican House, 2572 City Place Court, Baton Rouge, Louisiana. They have 136 draft beers. Go there, watch LSU baseball, the NCAA tournament, the Final Four, all that good stuff. The Pelican House, 2572 City Place Court. They support us, so you should support them.
I'll take what is a lug nut for 300, please, Alex.
Fair enough. As I saw on Twitter, everybody's like, where the fuck's Ralph? They were supposed to have a podcast yesterday. I had a flat tire in my car.
Hold on a second. I think it's important for our listeners to know what type of car we're talking about here.
I drive a Mini?
Yep.
Yeah, I drive a Mini.
There you go. There you go, ladies and gentlemen. Ralph drives a Mini.
Kevin, do you have any thoughts on me driving a Mini?
I was getting ready. Look, we were thinking about calling the police to file a report, but then Andrew smartly reminded us, well, he needs to be gone for 24 hours, and he's only been gone 23 and a half. Okay, fine. One of you. We were texting.
Yeah.
One of you smartly said 23 and a half hours to go.
Get Equisearch to go look for me.
Right. And then, you know, and then you suddenly start texting out of the blue, oh, yeah, guys, sorry, car trouble, flat tire in the Mini. And then immediately I'm picturing you and your gimpy ass on the side of the road trying to change a tire, trying to pull the tire out from underneath the Mini with your wife standing over you screaming in Spanish while cars are zipping by at 60 miles an hour and you're petrified of getting sucked underneath an 18-wheeler. That's good times. That's good times.
I want Ralph to take us back to the car dealership and what possessed him to shake the guy's hand on the lot and say, you know what? I'm going to go with that.
I'm going to go with the brand new Mini at full price that's marked up to hell and you can't get any package because everything's a la carte to make it custom.
I mean, it must have come with some great drugs.
It didn't. It came with good gas mileage. Andrew, I've ever said – what's that bank robber movie with Marky Mark?
The Heist?
Yeah.
The Italian Job?
Yeah.
No, Italian Job.
Italian Job. Like I saw that movie and I was like, a Mini. I want a fucking Mini. And it just like stuck with me. And when I finally was able to buy my first new car ever, I was like, I'm getting a Mini. And also Houston, you have to drive fucking everywhere. And everywhere you go is a 45-minute trip. So the gas mileage is a real important thing. And you can park anywhere. And my wife really likes it. So those were all win-win-win.
You live in Texas, man. You don't live in London.
That is true.
A Mini. Yeah.
Yeah, well, my wife...
You don't feel the slightest bit emasculated?
Andrew, I always feel emasculated when I try to pull the tire out of my trunk and it's really hard and I can't get the lug nuts. I gave up that ghost like when I was like 14. I'm like, I have like four pins in my leg and I just gave up the whole thing. I'm gonna be a man. I can't do the whole manly fixing things and strength and all that. Like the only thing about me that makes me a man is I get closer and closer to making six figures. That's the only thing. The rest of it is just a mess. So I drive a Mini. And my wife's like M&M. So. And the thing about the Mini, though, is once you start driving the Mini, when you go back to, like, a regular car, it feels like you're driving a boat / tank. Like, I'll drive my wife's car, and she'll be like, what the fuck is wrong with you? I'm like, it just feels like I'm driving a bus.
How many Rob Ryans could you fit in your car?
Two, probably, like, one.
Two tops.
I mean, put it this way.
If one of them had the lap belt surgery.
Because here's the thing. Like, when you go in the Mini and me and my wife will, like, go to Target and get a ton of groceries. It's barely enough for, like, me, her, and the groceries with the seats down packed to the gills. You know?
So this goes from 1 second sounding like a great endorsement for the Mini to you may want to rethink it.
Well, here's the thing. Like, you can't have a Mini if you need space in your car. Kids in a Mini, I can't even fucking imagine getting kids.
I just love that Ralph drops the great gas mileage. Like, he can't purchase a Honda Civic like every other warm core.
But a Honda Civic's like, oh, I drive a Honda Civic. People are always like, oh, you drive a Mini? Or they're like, you drive a fucking Mini. It's either get scorn or praise. So the Mini makes me unique. That could be good or that could be bad.
Okay, so you're going for shock value.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, like, the thing is, like, once me and my wife, when she finally gets pregnant, like, I won't be able to drive the Mini again. Like, once we have kids, out. So I just need to, like, enjoy it.
Okay, yeah, but here's the thing. If you're going to do that, if you're going for shock value and you don't care about the comedically small size of your vehicle, why not just get a smart car?
Dude, because a smart car is like a go-kart. I feel very, very unsafe in a smart car. Yeah.
Fair point.
But the thing is, like, I didn't.
Well, clearly safety is not a paramount thing.
I feel safer in my Mini than I did in my Saturn. Because the Saturn was like a piece of plastic. At least the Mini is like metal, and I feel safe. Here's the thing, though. Like, when I was shopping for cars, I didn't say I want a little tiny car. I said I want a Mini. Like, if I wouldn't have got a Mini, I wouldn't have gone to, like, the Fiat or the Smart Car or the Bug. Like, it wasn't – I just like the Mini. Like, that's it.
I think that makes it even worse.
It does. You could say it makes it even worse because I'm, like, I'm transfixed. And the thing about a Mini, like, you can't get – like, they know that you can't get a deal on a Mini. Like, they just are like, that's what it costs. You can't wheel and deal with them or anything.
All right. This is making me depressed. Let's move on.
All right.
This is terrible.
All right. The Saints had actual news this week, Andrew. They said Pierre Thomas's agent at the combine. They were like, hey, Pierre, we need to talk to you about your future. So
usually not a good sign.
Usually not a good sign because they can cut him and they get $3 million of cap space basically and no dead money. So it's like a ripe piece of, I guess, contract to create room. So what do you think they're going to do and what do you want them to do?
Well, it's funny. I've been asked a lot, you know, who's it going to be between Lance Moore and Pierre Thomas? And it's a tough thing because, you know, if you look at the two, I feel like Lance Moore is the one between the two that underperformed in terms of his contract value and what he did on the field last season. But the problem is the Saints have Kyrie Robinson. They have Mark Ingram, who really came on strong at the end of the season. And that playoff game against Philly was awesome. I mean, Robinson was too. And they've got Sproles. So they've got the depth at running back. And receiver is aging quickly, and the depth isn't really there. So it's kind of weird because it's, you know, you feel like Pierre Thomas is performing better. He's earned his contract more than Lance Moore has. But from a pure depth standpoint, they can probably, as a team, afford to lose a running back more than they can a receiver. So, and you know, like you always say, Ralph, what Buddy D used to tell you, don't listen to what the Saints say, watch what they do. And if they're asking Pierre Thomas to discuss his future, that's not a good sign. Now, I'm hopeful that what potentially they would ask him to do is they would say, look, you've got 1 year left and it's pricey. And we'd like to extend your contract to make it worth a lot less this year. So we'll give you a little signing bonus. You may make a little less than you would this year, but we'll extend you for another year so that you're on the roster and you're still under contract with us next season too. So hopefully it's a restructure. Hopefully Pierre Thomas is open to it. But if he's not, I mean, that's the decision. I think they'll probably put something like that to him and he may just say, you know what? I'd rather take my chances on an open market. Go ahead and cut me. So I think part of it's on Thomas too. Does he want to stay with the Saints in a platoon system where he might be making less money?
Kevin, if the Saints don't have Pierre Thomas in 2014, how does that change your position, your thoughts on the run? Say they get rid of Pierre Thomas and don't really add anybody significant in the draft. How do you feel about the running back position in 2014?
Still going to be nervous. I mean, there's no – I mean, yeah, Mark Ingram had the phenomenal game, and then he started to get a little better as the season wore on, because just a matter of fact. But Darren Sproles really
he faded down the stretch.
Right. And I mean, who else are they going to bring out? Cadet? I mean, ugh. Cadet didn't have too much didn't impress too much when he was out there.
Yeah.
So they kind of need Pierre. It's weird to say we need four running backs, like all of whom can play, but we need four running backs, all of whom can play.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that worries me is that Pierre Thomas is so good at little things like blitz pickup and that sort of thing. I worry about if the line, like if they lose Pierre Thomas, Andrew, if they lose Pierre Thomas and they don't re-sign Shreef and De La Puente, then the offensive line is in flux. Oh, and the guy who's really good at pass blitz pickup and that sort of thing, he's gone too. So it's like an interconnected thing where it starts to struggle. What do you think the number is for Pierre Thomas where he goes, Saints, I'm not taking that. I'm gonna roll the dice and go in the open market. It's just a guess. Where do you think?
He's making $3 million this year, so I don't really think he wants to go much below that. I mean, maybe.
But can he get to? But can he get that somewhere else?
That's a good question. I don't know. I don't know if any team would want to make him the feature back, but I think it would be fairly easy for Pierre Thomas to find a team that would be willing to give him a platoon system of two backs. I really feel like at this point the Saints really utilize three, if not four, guys. You know, really three in a game, because Kyrie, you know, obviously wasn't used as much this year. So I would say they really use a platoon system of three backs. But it can go pretty heavy on Sproles if they're passing a lot, which they tend to do. So I think Pierre Thomas could find himself in a situation where he was in a two-back system, get more reps, get more plays. But look, the Saints tried to play him more often in the past, and he often got injured. So, you know, this system and the reps that he got the past 2 years has helped his longevity. It's helped him stay healthy. It's helped him play a whole season. So I think in a lot of ways, hopefully Pierre Thomas recognizes that he is better in a platoon system because he can last a 16-game season. But I'll throw this out there. I mean, you know, I know every Saints fan loves Pierre Thomas, and he's definitely the back that can do everything. He can run in between the tackles. He can catch. He can block. He does all the little things. He's got good ball security. If you look at everything that Pierre Thomas does, his game really has no weakness. And that's why he's out there so much, because Pierre Thomas can be put in any situation, in any play call, and Sean Payton trusts that he's gonna do well. He may not break a 60-yard run. He may not have the explosive play, but he's always going to do well. So he's trusted.
He's been injured. He was injured against San Francisco, and he was injured this playoff. But they lean on him in big spots. I mean,
they do.
They in 2011. I mean, in 2010, when they needed that win on Monday night in Atlanta, they leaned on him heavily. The playoff run in 2009, you want to talk about Porter, you want to talk about whoever. Pierre Thomas in the NFC Championship in the Super Bowl was as big as any of them.
I agree, but I'll throw this out there, Ralph, just to be on – and you know I love Pierre Thomas, and you know he's been with the team for so long. Fans love him and everything. But I'll throw this out there. When he was injured in the playoffs, it forced the Saints' hand to start trusting Mark Ingram and Kyrie Robinson with roles that maybe they didn't trust him with before. That meant giving Robinson the ball more. And, yeah, they were worried about the fumbles, but you know what? He didn't fumble, and he played really well. And same thing with Mark Ingram. Yeah, he's going to drop a couple screen passes, or he might cough up a ball like he did in the playoffs. He might miss a blitz pickup. But if he's in, it opens up things for your offense, because – it's one of those things where they're starting to play the run more because Mark Ingram is such an in-between the tackles guy, and that's a strength that it actually opens up the passing game. Teams are thinking, well, Mark Ingram's in the game. He's got to be running. They've got to be handing it off. And this it opens up the passing game down the field for the Saints. So I think having those guys in more often actually helps the offense. I think at times Sean Payton has trusted Pierre Thomas so much to a fault that it's almost maybe even hurt the offense.
Kevin, prediction.
Can't believe I forgot Kyrie Robinson.
Kevin, prediction. Pierre Thomas, where is he in 2014?
I'm going to take the I'm going to take the uncomfortable route here, and I'm going to say he's not with the Saints. And I'm looking at a cap space chart right now, and I'm going to throw I'm going to say he's with the Indianapolis Colts.
Wow!
They have 39. They have 39. I mean, look. The Raiders have.
That would be a great fit for him.
Exactly. The Raiders have $65 million in cap space. The Browns have $60 million in cap space. The Jaguars have $55 million in cap space. All those teams are shit. And I don't know what their running back situation is. So who knows what the hell his platoon situation could be like. Number four on the list is the Colts. They've got 39.9 cap space. You got him and you could get him and Trent Richardson. They've got they'll have another guy on there. I can't think of his name right now. But Pierre could sort of act like a mentor, come in for a
Donald
spell.
Donald Brown was terrible until they started going to the spread for the Colts. And that's me being a fantasy geek.
Well, then there you go.
Yeah, I mean, so, Pierre Thomas sounds like the starter in that platoon system.
And here's the thing, like, Kevin, what you said with the cap room, the Colts have so much that you got to hit that floor. You know, Andrew's mentioned this a couple times. You got to hit the floor. Like the Raiders have, you know, $60 million in cap room, and Cleveland's got 40 or 50. So as a team, you got to hit the floor every year. So they can say to Pierre Thomas, "Hey, we'll give you 1 year, $4.5 million. We got to hit the floor, so we'll give you a little bit extra. It's just for 1 year, but that might be double what the Saints, you know." So I mean, because that's basically Andrew. Isn't that where Pierre Thomas is at? He's basically going to be year to year. Right.
I think so. Yeah. I don't. At his age, I don't think teams are going to give him a 4 or 5 year contract. So it's just not going to happen.
It wouldn't stun me. It wouldn't stun me if he got a little bit more than $3 million on the open market. I mean, like you say, it just takes one team.
Yep.
You know.
Yep. And you know, and people need good backs that they can trust, veteran backs that you know. Look, Pierre Thomas is healthy. You know, he's. I mean, I know he ended the season with a chest injury, but. For the most part, he's kept his legs in good shape. He's had no serious knee injuries, and you know he had a good season, so he's kept his body in pretty good shape.
Two other teams that have really good cap space that I wanted to bring up.
Okay.
Are one the Vikings? They got like I think $34 million in cap space, and he will not be asked to be the number one guy for sure.
Yeah.
And then two, the Eagles. They've got 35 and change in cap space, and
I don't really see him in the Eagles offense fitting the way they play, though. I mean, McCoy is very much a scat back. They kind of
– And they have what's his name? Brown, I think.
They like to get those guys in space. Don't like to run in between the tackles as much.
Yeah, but, I mean, they could still use Pierre for screens, but I was thinking more Pierre for the – to help with blitz pickups or blocking you, as a running back because the Eagles quarterbacks, I mean, don't they get knocked around a lot?
A little bit. I mean,
they did before Vic got benched.
I mean,
we
mentioned last week about the Dolphins needing five new offensive linemen so Streif could be a place. The Dolphins need running backs too. I mean,
and they've got good cap space there.
I mean, they've got Donald Thomas who's they got Lamar Thomas who's I mean, Pierre Thomas, I mean, I could see him being not like the featured guy where he gets most of the carries, but I could see him getting more carries than he definitely gets with the Saints. And like you said, they have cap room. I mean, I'll be surprised if Pierre Thomas is with the Saints. But I also said it. Remember, after 2010, we were like, the Saints almost traded him to New England during the year.
and he hurt his ankle and went on IR. I was like, he's done. He's not playing anymore for the Saints. And he ended up signing the 4-year deal. So you never know. But I'm gonna be surprised if he's with the Saints. I think that like you said, Andrew, the young guys stepped up, and the Saints, I think they feel like if they don't get Pierre Thomas at the price they want, they'll be okay. And his cap space, his contract is just too tempting and easy to create more room at this point.
Yeah. I'd love to see him with the Saints, you know, but like all guys, I mean, like Drew Brees one day and a lot of other players, I mean, you saw four of them already with Vilma and, you know, Greer and those other guys. I mean, the time of the clock runs out on everybody. And right now the Saints need cap space. If you've been reading, you know that they're interested in re-signing Streif. I think that's going to cost maybe as much as $5 million a year, maybe more. And we know that Jimmy Graham is going to be upwards of $10 million a year. And with the cap space, even with the increase in the salary cap, it's still going to cost a lot to keep those two players. And then when you add on top of that free agents, draft picks, they've got to find some room. So, you know, that's a quick, easy $3 million. So the math adds up. You know, I would say that Pierre Thomas is on notice.
Kevin, we actually had a little bit of Jimmy Graham contract news today saying that the Saints and him are like about – I saw $2.5 million apart per year. Like the Saints want to pay him 10. He wants like 12 and a half. Any chance this gets done before they have to put the tag on him?
No.
None.
Wow, we're doom and gloom tonight.
Yeah, I mean that scenario that Florio laid out where the Saints tag him as a tight end, Graham wins the arbitration, so the Saints aren't allowed to switch the tag to the wide receiver, and then Jimmy Graham is an unrestricted free agent. Andrew, let's play that out since we're being doom and gloom. Let's say Saints tag him as a tight end. The arbitrator says, no, he's a wide receiver. And, oh, by the way, Saints, you can't change the tag. He's unrestricted free agent now. If that happens, I say the odds of him being a Saint is like 5%.
Yeah, but I read today that that's actually not how it plays out. Apparently, it's not on the Saints to designate what they're franchising him as. This was on Pro Football Talk today. Apparently, all they have to do is franchise him. At that point, it's up to the NFL committee to decide
what he is,
what position he is. Yep. Okay. So it's not on the Saints. So once they tag him, I mean, he's tagged no matter what, and then they decide what position he is. So anyway, yeah, I mean, it's going to suck if he ends up being a receiver, and it's going to cost a lot more money. But that might be an incentive for the Saints. We'll see how it plays out. I mean, once they tag him, if he gets designated as a tight end, then the cards are in the Saints' hands in terms of negotiations. If Jimmy Graham wins that battle, that's a huge cap hit. And so then Mickey Loomis might be inclined to give him $12 million a year to cushion the blow in year one.
Kevin, we're going to have fun with trade value, super hypothetical in a minute. But let's say the Saints, they probably won't exclusive rights him. They'll probably just franchise him so it'll be two number ones. At what point does the package that a team would offer the Saints become too tempting for Mickey Loomis to pass up and let Jimmy Graham walk? Does it have to be two number ones? Or what is the package where you say, okay, I'm okay with Jimmy Graham going to Cleveland or wherever?
Is it – it's two number ones in the same draft if a team has it, or is it back-to-back years?
It would be back-to-back years. And probably what it would be – it probably wouldn't be two number ones. I mean, I wouldn't think. It would probably be like Cleveland saying, hey, Saints, we're going to sign Jimmy Graham to this. We want you to trade him to us, and then we're going to sign him to an extension. We'll give you a one and a three or whatever. I don't think a team would just straight up sign him for two number ones. Does it?
The one and the three, are they in the same draft?
Yeah, it'd be this year. It'd be a one and a three. Like what's the value of the trade where you said you might not like it, but you're like, well, that's too good a deal to pass on.
I'd probably be inclined to say multiple picks, and if I almost feel like having more picks is better than having higher picks. I don't know why. There's just something. Yeah. Just something in my head. So if somebody said, okay, we'll give you a 2 this year, a 2, a 4 this year, and then the following year we'll give you a 2,
and
you know,
3.
Something like that. I could probably see that.
Yeah.
Like anything that gets more than 2.
More than 2 picks.
Yeah.
And they have to be like quality picks, like top 3 rounds.
Yeah. Top 3 rounds or again, if it's okay, maybe if it's like, all right, we'll give you a 1 this year, a 4, and then the following year a 3, I could still see that.
Yeah. Andrew, what's the trade value for Jimmy Graham where you're okay with him?
There's no trade that I would find suitable. I just think Jimmy Graham's a once-a-decade type talent. He's arguably the best receiver in NFL. I mean, best tight end in NFL history, receiving tight end. So, you know, you could put Antonio Gates and Rob Gronkowski in the mix with him, but I don't really think you can name another tight end besides those two that has had the kind of impact that he's had. And if you look at his last 3 seasons and the numbers he's been able to put up, it's unprecedented. So I don't think you're going to find any draft pick, even in the first round, that's going to have the kind of impact on the field that Jimmy Graham's done the last 3 years. So even a 1 and a 3 is not good enough for me.
Yeah, I'm with you. I just think draft picks, there's something about them that makes people think really crazy, stupid things. Like they think, oh my God, think of all these draft picks we can get. Like, and even Kevin to a certain extent, he's like, I want more of them. Like because draft picks, they have this like endless possibility. Because you think if you get 4 picks in the first 80 over 2 years, my God, we'll hit on them all. And we'll be awesome. Like that's what people think. And I just think, no, just keep the best tight end in football. Like that's what you do.
I mean, if you look at the first round this year, I would guess that of the 32 first round picks in this year's draft, I'm going to estimate that maybe 2 of the 32 will end up being as good or better than Jimmy Graham in their career.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, now it's different sport, but like the Pelicans traded, they traded the number 1 pick last year and the number 1 pick next year for Holiday. And everybody's mm-hmm. like, oh my God, it's going to be a lottery pick. It's going to be like the number 11 a pick in the NBA draft. And that's a horrible trade. But like history tells you that like the number 11 pick in the NBA lottery is usually like Jarvis Jones, who averages like 8 points a game. Like it's not right. Like it's not that much of value, but because it says first round pick on it, Kevin, they just cling to it, and it's just these. We just, Kevin, love draft picks, don't we? We just want the Saints to have like 8 draft picks in May because it makes the draft so awesome. Isn't that what it is? Like
essentially, yeah. I mean, playing video games or playing the Madden and all that stuff. It's you always want more draft picks.
Yeah.
I mean, that's we're the video game generation. So we've sort of come up and experienced getting more draft picks. That's it. That's the currency. It's the Bitcoin of the NFL.
You know, and people are like, well, if we get a bunch of middle round picks, they picked Hakeem Kicks in the 3rd round. They'll get 4 more guys just as good as him. That'll be awesome. They don't think, you know what? They're going to get 4 more Courtney Watsons.
Well, look, I mean, you look at Sean Payton's history. He's been with the Saints 8 years now. The only draft pick he's ever had that I would say was better than Jimmy Graham is Jahri Evans. I would say that he's had 1, and that was a 3rd or 4th rounder. But that's the one pick he's had in 8 years of drafting that I would say was more successful than the Jimmy Graham pick.
Yeah.
I mean, you could argue Cameron Jordan's still just scratching the surface and he's doing really well, but I don't put Cam Jordan in the same league as Jimmy Graham.
I think that's true. I mean, you know, speaking of trade value, I want to get into this in this fun hypothetical. The Browns, who Lord the fuck knows what they're doing. They just hired Bill Kuharik and whatever. But apparently they tried to trade for Jim Harbaugh in like a super secret thing, and Harbaugh nixed it because his wife was probably like, "You want me to go to Cleveland? Are you fucking out of your mind?" And the rumor was it was like a 2 and a 3. Andrew, is there a package that a team could call up Mickey Loomis and say, "Mickey, we want Sean Payton, and you can come create any package you want"? What does that package have to be for Mickey Loomis to say, "Ah, oh, we'll think about that. We'll get back to you," to trade Sean Payton?
Yeah, again, I think he's kind of got Drew Brees status in New Orleans. I don't think Jimmy Graham has that necessarily. You know, with two firsts and you don't have to pay Graham the money he wants, I would think about that. I don't think no one's going to offer the Saints two first-round picks and pay Jimmy Graham.
Don't underestimate
kind of money
stupid. Don't underestimate stupid.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. But that's probably the only thing I would consider, two firsts and, you know, even then, I would think long and hard about it. So, I think the same. I think higher for Payton. If that's the only thing I'm willing to take really for Graham, I think the value of Payton's higher. So,
John Gruden got 2 number 1s, 2 number 2s, and $8 million, and he didn't even win a Super Bowl.
That's what I'm talking about.
But he didn't win. Not before they traded him. Like he hadn't. Won a Super Bowl when Tampa got him.
Right.
Yeah, I would say 2 ones and 2 twos sounds about right for Sean Payton.
I would go higher.
I would go higher after 2012, Andrew.
True.
I would say the bidding would start at
3 first round picks.
At 4.
I would say 4. Four. I would say it would be 4 number 1 picks, and it would almost be the only thing that would change it would be like if you said, okay, we're going to give you 3 number – like if Cleveland called up and they're like, okay, I want 3 number 1 picks and I want Joe Thomas.
Yeah.
Like it I has like to that. Be so amazing that when they make
– That you're set. That any old schmo idiot coach could come in and take over the reins.
And even then, I would say no. The only reason I would do it is I would be okay with it is if Sean Payton wanted to leave. Like that's why you'd have to be okay with it, but it would have to be ridiculous. And Kevin, I think we even as Saints fans ramp it up a notch of ridiculousness for what we'd want for Sean Payton because of 2012. Like we've seen it, like when he's not around.
Yeah, well, so is the rest of the league.
Yeah,
I mean, so is the rest of the league. I mean, the rest of the league has to know, and the rest of the league. Has to understand what Sean Payton brings to the table. They have to, and if they don't, well, then they wouldn't make the offer, and then that's their loss. But you'd end up getting some desperate teams like the Browns, like the Jaguars,
Miami.
Man, I just hope Jerry Jones isn't listening to this podcast.
I was just about to bring that up. What if it was the Cowboys making the offer?
Ooh.
Would you be okay with him flying to Dallas and being the coach there?
No, but like here's the thing though, like once it's done, for me, it's a bad situation for Harbaugh because once you know that like once everybody knows that you considered going, like I don't know how you take that back, you know? And it seems bad. So like. I mean, I'd be pissed off about it, Andrew, but I think, like, if you got a floor-me offer, I think I'd be okay with it, especially with the Cowboys now. Like, I think the Cowboys are about to collapse because Tony Romo's back is about to go. So, like, 2004 number one picks starting in 14, 15, 16, and 17 from the Cowboys, like – that's really tempting because I think there's going to be a lot of top 10 picks in there.
Absolutely. Well, you would think with Sean Payton, it probably wouldn't be. But, I mean, that's why the Cowboys would make that move.
Yeah.
They assume they wouldn't need first-round picks because they'd be winning. but I'd be tempted for sure.
It'd be tempting. And like I said, Kevin's right. We just like we're obsessed with draft picks, and we know like what the Saints are without Sean Payton, and we're still like four number ones.
Well, here's the thing. It's because we still have in semi-recent history. Well, I don't know, not fully semi-recent. We still remember the Ricky Williams draft, and then we remember this past year. I mean, they lost a draft pick, and then the year before they, I think, had a draft pick taken, and then you go back to the Thomas Morstead draft when they only had four picks.
Yeah.
So it's just, man, stockpile. I mean, shit, if you could give a good team 10 draft picks or 11 draft picks, Jesus, I mean.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, you look at what Seattle and San Francisco and New England have been able to do, how they've made their team successful. It's because they haven't picked high, but, man, they've had 10, 12 picks in each draft.
And the Saints. They went sort of like in a cold stretch, Andrew, where they weren't drafting too good. But like 2012 and 2013, they kind of have been like the hot guy at the crafts table pretty much.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, it gives me a lot of room for optimism with how they're going to pick this year.
All right, since we're talking trades, apparently there's a possibility of me being traded to the Falcoholic podcast. So, Kevin, what is my trade value, and are you okay with me going to the Falcoholic podcast?
Well, I mean, it depends on who we're getting in return or what we're getting in return. I forgot to – you know, I didn't consider the whole can't get a tire – can't get the spare tire,
my physical grade at the combine, not
very low.
The cone drill, I'm still trying to finish it.
Yeah, well, and the vertical leap is pretty bad, but it's okay because Dave thinks the combine's useless. So
we'll get to that in a second.
I don't know. Maybe the. I mean, left-handed forearm strength, though, it's got to be pretty impressive.
No.
Right-handed typing strength, that's got to be pretty impressive.
I'm pretty adroit with, like, if they had a one-handed catch drill at the combine, I would tear that shit up.
Well, I mean, your communication skills are pretty impeccable. You did use the word adroit.
But I drink a lot during the year, as Andrew and you can attest. So, Andrew, I drink a lot during the post-game show day of game. So does that, like,
oh, yeah,
your liver
has no value, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That is true.
I don't know. So I mean, what are we thinking of? Some boxes of wine. Maybe
a box of fun.
Yeah, a copy of Step Brothers on
DVD.
I don't know. It's got to be at least Blu-ray.
I was thinking VHS.
I would say a subscription to Netflix, but the lowest tier.
Yeah.
And look, if somebody wants to sweeten the deal with me to get me to sign off on it, if they could just include a subscription to the WWE network, that would also be appreciative.
Andrew, do you have anything specific that you want to conceal?
I mean, I just don't think with those kind of demands, we're ever going to get a trade.
No,
so
you're not.
I don't see that happening.
No.
No, you know, I would like to. My only demand really would be like a half drank Abita beer. I would trade you for a half drank Abita beer because that would be evidence that local beer was coursing through the veins of an Atlanta Falcon fan.
Yeah.
So that would be enough for me that they had to drink one of our beers. But they weren't allowed to finish it. I think that would be enough for me to trade you.
So my trade value is somewhere between a half drink of Beta beer and the Netflix subscription.
Well, they have to take the mini too. You have to take the mini with you. You have to.
It's my wife said no. It's a bag of Skittles, opened or unopened. Opened. Opened.
Only the yellow ones.
Only the yellow ones.
All right. But you got to take the mini with you. That's a deal breaker.
Yeah, it's a deal breaker. All right. Dave couldn't join us tonight, so Dave and Andrew were going to argue about the combine. Dave thinks the combine is useless. Andrew, I don't think the combine is useless, but my God, they overhype this thing to death.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no, there's no doubt they overhype it. And I don't even think it trumps, you know, other evidence you have. You know, in other words, the tape, interviews. There's a lot of other stuff that I think is more valuable than 40 times how much they bench press. But look, here's the bottom line. When you're going to spend millions of dollars on players and you're in a business where you win or you lose your job, it's that simple. You better believe if I'm a GM, I'm turning over every goddamn stone I can to educate myself as much as possible. So if I get to know how strong a guy is, how fast a guy is, you goddamn right I'm going to want to know that stuff. So that's part of it. I think also when you look at the stuff, I mean, you think about, let's say, the guy's a really poor route runner, you know, and you look at the tape and he's a terrible route runner. And that's kind of his knock, and that's maybe why he's a six-round pick project. But then you know, he shows up at the combine, and you know how they have a lot of those drills, and he looks really smooth coming out of his breaks. You know he's had the last month to prepare for the combine. You know he knows what his weaknesses are, and you see the amount of work that he's put into it, and then at the combine he impresses you because, wow, all this stuff that I saw on tape, it looks like he's fixed a lot of it. Then – those are other clues. That tells you the guy's a hard worker. It tells you that the guy knows his weaknesses and works on them. So there's lots of little subtle things like that. And look, when you're making snap judgments, you know, you got 5 minutes on the clock once a guy's picked. You've got a board. You've got to make a snap judgment. Do we take the running back or do we take the corner we kind of like? You know, we have them graded about equally. You have to make a decision. There's got to be a trump card in there. You know, hey, this guy interviewed really well, so I'm kind of leaning this way. Or, hey, this other guy, we could use more speed on the team, and his 40 times out of this world. So, you know, you're not basing everything off what a guy bench presses, what a shuttle cone time is. But when you're trying to make snap judgments and you need all the information and you need a trump card, those are the types of things that can – sway you in one direction or another.
The funny thing, Kevin, about the combine was all year they're like, Jadeveon Clowney, he's loafing it. He's terrible. He's has bad character issues. He drives 120 miles an hour. He took the year off and then he runs like a 4.4. And they're like, holy shit.
First overall.
But Kevin, is there anything in the combine that you look at and is. And if a player does or does not do it, even though maybe in your mind you know that you shouldn't downgrade him for it, when it happens, you're like, oh, that guy, he didn't do that. I don't know if I like him as much.
I don't know. I kind of just look at – this is going to make – I guess I probably – I kind of lean more in Dave's side of the camp here. You just look at – I think that there's so much hype around fractions and you know, inches and millimeters and shit like that. Like a guy's
it is a game of inches.
Yeah.
Thank you, Al Pacino.
we're clawing for that inch.
You look at the long jump Hoo-ha. That they do. You look at the leap that they're doing. You're looking at their 40 time, but again, this is without pads. They get to psych. They get to, you know, get themselves psyched before they do the long jump. They get themselves psyched before they do that reaching jump.
They're not wearing any pads.
Exactly, they're not wearing any pads. They've got nobody chasing after them. Nobody, you know, going at them coming at them from either side to try and tackle them. They've got none of that. So you've got sort of these ideal conditions, but even then, what the hell difference does it make if Jadeveon Clowney can run 40 yards in 4.? What was it? A 4.6?
It was 4.48 at 260 pounds.
Okay, but again,
that's freakazoid.
Oh yeah, of course it is. But here's the difference: 4.48 versus 455.
No, it's no different. I mean,
but and still, we're talking 40 yards.
Yeah.
40 yards. Can he get from the line to the quarterback? And what is that? 10 yards?
Yeah.
If that, that's less than 10 yards. That's 7 yards. Can he shove the guy in front of him out of the way and get the 7 yards to the quarterback before the pissant throws the ball?
Yeah, I mean,
probably. That's, he'd probably do that better than most guys.
That's an interesting thing that actually Pat Kerwin of the Sirius NFL Radio, he has a formula that he uses where he takes like the bench press and a bunch of the drills and he scores
it.
He's
a mad scientist.
And basically what it is his theory is that's as a defensive end, you have to turn your speed into power when the other guy tries to block you, and his formula comes up with it. And his formula, if you're above 70, that means you're awesome. And I think the only guy that he missed on, I can't remember it. It was that guy with the Giants, weird name, Kawiki. I can't remember.
Mateus. Yeah.
He was the only one that, like, when he listed the ones that he had over 70, that you were like, oh, that guy's a boss. Like, the rest of them were like 8 to 12 to either elite guys.
Well, the one last thing I'll throw out there that the combine's useful for, I mean, you talk about upper body strength and bench press and all that. I mean, I think if you look in the course of you know, the Saints' history of drafting, the guys they've gotten, guys like Charles Brown, Zach Strief, John Stinchcomb, German Bushrod, all guys that weren't strong enough when they came to the NFL and they weren't ready to play. And the few times they did early in their career, it was a disaster. I mean, I don't know if you remember Bushrod when he first got in, or Stinchcomb when he played a little bit. I mean, they really struggled. But they got strong enough, they developed, they spent time in the weight room, and they were able to get stronger. And I think the combine tells you, like, some of these guys are not ready to play because they just don't have the upper body strength yet. They just need more time in the weight room. They have the potential, they have the technique, they've got all that stuff. They just need to get stronger. And then you look at guys like Carl Nix, who tore it up at the combine. And you think, you know, in terms of strength, you're like, okay, well, this guy needs work on his technique, but he's ready in year one because he's so strong. We know we can plug him in year one and he's not going to get pushed around. So little things like that, I think, too, can tell you if a guy's ready right away or if he needs time to develop.
And Bill Parcells always said, you know, if you take a guy that's an exception to the rule, like a short quarterback, or he doesn't have this measurable, he doesn't have that measurable, if you do it consistently, then you have a team of exceptions. And to me, like a guy like Jarvis Landry, he didn't run well, and I know he hurt his hamstring, and so he'll probably run again in his pro day. But to me, if he runs like a 4.5 or a 4.6, even though I loved him at LSU, Andrew, he's smaller. If he's small and he can't run fast, that means to me he's probably like – he's not going to be an elite receiver. He might be like a Lance Moore type guy, which isn't bad. Lance Moore has been really good for the Saints, but you don't pick Lance Moore in the first or the second round. You know, so like to me, like, you want a guy that's big, strong, smart, and fast. And if he's missing one of those things, you can be like, well, Drew Brees is a little short, but he's got a good enough arm, and he's a freak athlete as far as mobility in the pocket, so we'll overlook the height. But if a guy's missing like two things, and you're like, he's dumb and he's small, or he's, you know, slow and he's small, like, that's a, like, to me, Kevin, that's a bad sign. Like, if he's missing more than like one of the measurables that you need to be an NFL player, you know?
Yeah.
Great.
I've got nothing to add to that. That all makes sense.
But the thing is, the NFL Network, they got 24 hours of time to fill. So, I mean, they just go.
Yeah, it's like the top 10 list for the blog, man. You got to stretch it out.
Stretch it out.
It's a long offseason.
My wife on the other day was like, why the fuck are you watching? I was watching it Sunday morning. I'm like, I want to watch Sammy Watkins run the 40. She's like, oh, my God. So
who's faster in the 40, you behind your mini or Sammy Watkins?
Probably Sammy Watkins, but my cruising speed is probably better. Like, once I get to top end, but I don't get the top end until like 30 yards. He probably gets top end faster. Kevin, let's continue the off-season breakdown.
Michael Sam gets the top end.
Michael Sam.
Boo.
Michael Sam had the best combine of any gay football player in the history of the world.
I heard it. I mean, I didn't watch him specifically, but I heard he actually kind of struggled.
He does because if you look at his tape, apparently, like, he can't play in space and he wasn't as strong as they thought. So, like, the agility drills, he sucked. And, like, I mean, he's like a Martez Wilson. Like, he might be.
So is he dropping to a sixth round pick now?
I think he's going to be a sixth or seventh round pick. I do. If you take away two of his games, he's got like five sacks, you know, and that's not necessarily a knock because he had a great game, you know, against Florida, but he has one thing that's going to keep him in the NFL. Can he rush the quarterback? And it's not a
or special teams. Special teams.
Well,
can
yeah,
keep
that
him
could
in
be
legal.
Something else. He could. He seems like a guy that would be willing to play special teams. So I actually think he's probably going to make it. I think he's going to be like a Martez Wilson. If Martez Wilson would have been functional on special teams, the Saints would have kept him, and he might have been a guy in certain spots where you could play him, and he'll get you 3 to 5 sacks, and he'll play all four of your special teams. That's a guy you need on your roster, you know?
Yep.
So that's where I think Michael Sam is. But I think it's going to be a big to-do, Andrew, when they're like, we're in round six and he ain't been picked yet, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
Kevin, off-season positions, we keep on going. This week it's wide receiver. I am firmly in the Wang from Moose Denied, his column of Kenny Stills is the shit. He's a young Joe Horn, and there's only two receivers that have had better rookie seasons than him in Saints history. It's Marcus Colston and it's Danny Abramowitz. That's it. So I think Kenny Stills is going to bust out and be really freaking good in 2014. But that said, I still think the Saints need to add another receiver either through free agency or through the draft. How are you with the receivers going into next year?
They need to draft a wide receiver.
How high? Exactly. First three rounds?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So if you
– Expert analysis.
Expert – so, Andrew, do you agree with that, or are you fine if they just bring everybody back and don't really do anything?
No, I don't. I really like the crop of free agent receivers this year. I don't think the class is very strong, and I think the draft class is exceedingly strong. I mean, I think the guys that are available in the draft are, you know, you're going to be able to get a guy in the second, third round, maybe even the fourth round that could potentially be an impact player. So, I'm with Kevin. They have to pick a guy. They have to, preferably early.
We know specific players, but do you have a preference of like, do you want, like, if they draft, do you want a possession guy? Do you want a burner? Do you want, what's the sort of guy that if they, not a name, but like a guy that you're like, oh, that's who I wanted. He's 6'3" and he's not polished, but God, he runs a 4.3. He's the guy they need. We need a deep threader. We need a possession guy. What kind of receiver do you want him to pick?
Well, isn't Kenny Stills supposed to be a burner?
Yes.
Or, yeah. And Joe Morgan? Well, Joe Morgan's kind of a burner.
So when he's sober, yes.
So
he's sober and has a working knee.
Yeah.
Oh, fantastic.
Try the field.
Yeah, I'm willing to say not a burner this time out. I think just good route runner, solid hands. Let's bring one of those guys in.
So Lance Moore.
I'm hoping Jarvis Landry runs another shitty 40 time and tumbles, and the Saints get him in the second or third round.
Oh, he's not going in the first after that combine.
No.
No way.
He might be a guy that plummets, and I could see
I mean, I would say his the highest he's getting picked right now is low second round.
Yeah, and the thing is with the Saints, Andrew, we know, like, they're kind of their draft history. You can look at them and say they don't pick a linebacker in the first round under Mickey Loomis. But the other thing they do is they will identify a player that they like and go and get him. I think more so than other teams. I mean, Morstead and Jonathan Sullivan and Brown and Jenkins last year. I mean, like, they
are Cal not, Woods, Morstead, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they're not afraid to go and move to get a player. So, I mean,
John Jenkins.
Yeah. So if you had – where do you think in the war room, where do you think wide receiver is on their sort of needs list? And would that be a move that would surprise you on draft day if they moved up in one of the early rounds to get a receiver?
No, it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, the thing is, I don't know that I'd want to trade up because there's so much talent.
Yeah.
You know, so in other words, like, if you lose a guy, it's not that big of a deal because you've got so much talent. It's not like maybe some other positions where if you lose De La Puente, you've probably got two or three centers that you feel like could start right away. And so if, you know, if the first two get picked early, then maybe you need to trade up and get the third one or whatever. But at receiver, I feel like you can kind of let the dominoes – let the draft come to you a little bit. So, but look, I mean, Brandon Cooks is a, he's a little squirt guy. I disagree a little bit with Kevin on the burner. I think Joe Morgan, we never know if he's going to be the same. Kenny Stills, I think, is the heir apparent to Lance Moore. So I think they still need that one guy that can really stretch the field. So Brandon Cooks, I mean, he's small, but man, he is explosive. It'd be fun to have like a version 2.0 of Darren Sproles on the team, and I think he would be that. So that's a guy. I mean, you look at the guy from Penn State, who's very fast, very good. And, you know, Odell Beckham Jr., you know, he may go way too early, but you never know. I mean, he's an explosive guy.
They had a big, tall, white dude that looked like a skinhead.
Yeah, I saw that. He ran like a 4.3.
He ran like a 4.3, but he looked kind of like a skinhead.
Yeah, he did. And you know, look, if the Saints can get Jarvis Landry in the fourth or fifth round where it's like tremendous value, I would have no problem with that too.
Yeah. I think they're going to pick a receiver high just because they know that, like, they like Robert Meacham and Lance Moore and all that sort of thing, but like they got to start to turn that thing over. You know, those guys are just getting old, and I think,
yeah, I mean, their young guys are Morgan and Nick Toon, and those guys haven't really panned out.
I think the Saints. I mean, it seems to me, Kevin, that the analysis would be, God, we got to get younger. There's really let's not sign a Jacoby Jones. Let's draft a guy, and hopefully even if they get another guy that's like Kenny Stills, and they get Kenny Stills' production out of him, well, then all of a sudden you're really starting to churn over your receiving core. So to me, it seems like receiver, it's better to get younger than sign a veteran guy as a patch.
You say sign a veteran guy as a patch. My mind immediately went to David Patton.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was serviceable, did his job.
Jacoby Jones could be that guy, maybe.
He
could help on special teams, too. Like, I mean, it's like, but Andrew said, it's like, you're like, eh. It's like, it's not thrilling.
Right. I mean, just go young. Get a young guy. I'd rather you get a young guy because, again, Robert Meacham. Yeah. Lance Moore might not be back. Robert Meacham, probably not back. Marcus Colston, he's in his final. He's got to be on the downside of his career. And I'm not saying that like, oh, he's going to suck, but.
I think you probably have one more Marcus Colston type year where he's really good, maybe. And then you probably have two more of. He's like a 700-800 yard guy. Like I think his downward trajectory has begun.
I hate to break it to you, but I think he's already a 700-800 yard guy.
Well, this year he was almost 1,000, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I think this year he might not be.
Okay, now we have Twitter questions, and they're going to be fun. Kevin, this one's for you. What would you prefer? And this is from Jay Green. What would you prefer? Graham signs with the Falcons or Sarah Palin is elected president?
Oh, for come on, dude. Really? Really? Eat a fucking bullet. Is that option C? Because option C sounds pretty tempting.
Yeah, that's not a world I want to live in.
No. No. Jesus Christ.
You betcha. And I can say this, total off topic, as a financial conservative, Texas is so conservative now. I'm going to recap every political ad that's ever been on Texas this whole year. Barack Obama wants to kill your baby. I'm running for dog catcher. Vote for me. Like, they don't even have any – even Democrats are like, fuck Obama. Like, that's how conservative and red Texas is. But off topic anyway.
Thank you. Wonderful. Wonderful. Texas, wonderful state.
It is.
God.
I think you've stumped the Schwab, whoever asked that question.
Yeah, Jay Green.
How long of a contract is Jimmy Graham getting with the Falcons?
It's 5 years, $60 million. Like, it's $12 million a year. Like,
5 years, $60 million. Oh God. Could she destroy America in 4 years?
Now, even if you're like,
checks and balances, baby.
There's the thing, like Obama won in 2008, and then 2 years later, everybody's like, you got to slow down there, buddy. And they just elect the Republican House, and it just grinds to a halt. Like, I could see the same thing with Palin, so it wouldn't be that bad. Like it wouldn't be that bad, but, like, you got 5 years of, like, watching Jimmy Graham score a lot of touchdowns. It's a hard call. It's a hard call.
Oh, man.
Make the call, help.
Oh, man. I guess I'd rather see Jimmy Graham go to the Falcons.
Oh! No. No, come on.
Here's the thing.
Ugh.
Here's the thing. Is Jimmy Graham healthy the entire 5 years?
I don't care. I don't. Kevin, wasn't what Bobby Hebert and Morton Anderson did to us enough?
Yeah.
I know you're old enough to remember that stuff.
Yeah, oh, I am. Jesus.
I know the scars are still there.
Morton Anderson's leading scorer for both teams.
Ugh. Take it back, Ralph. I mean, Kevin.
Take it back. I'm going to have to say.
I'll take it back. I'll take it back. Hail to the chief.
No one person can destroy America. We're not fucking Venezuela. You know, I mean. If Palin becomes president, like, there ain't going to be, like, the shelves at Walmart are going to be empty and it's going to be, like, burning cars in the street. Like, it'll be okay. Like, it's never, like, just because we have the internet now, all the people that talk about politics, they're all connected and they just talk about it endlessly every day. Like, it's not, like, it doesn't, like, it's nothing, the world doesn't end. Like, even if
I know the world,
if Jimmy Graham goes to the Falcons, the world ends.
I know the world doesn't. What you're saying is right. And I remember this question came up. You asked me one of these fucking questions during the 2012 election. Something about Romney getting elected.
Who would you want if you could have the Saints win two Super Bowls, or you could pick who wins the presidential election?
Right. And I remember saying something to this effect was, it doesn't matter who wins because, the world's not going to end and all you're voting for is who do you think is going to do the least amount of damage?
Here's the thing, though. Like, people that are really liberal think that, say, Sarah Palin is cuckoo birds, and people that are really conservative financial, like me, we look at Joe Biden and we'd be like, oh, my God, if Joe Biden is president, like, he might be hitting on female prime ministers. He might be firing missiles at Mexico for fun. Like, you don't know what the fuck Joe Biden would do. And the same thing with Palin. Like, you look at it, like, she's cuckoo birds. Like, that could go off the rails. But if you're like, if it's Hillary Clinton or it's, you know, Paul Ryan, it'll be fine, whatever. But, like, there's certain candidates that, like, freak out people on the political spectrum, and that's Palin. She's one of those. But I'm going to say, like, I'd hate to root against Jimmy Graham. Like, that would drive me – Andrew, that would drive me batty. Like, I like him. So he's just a fun – he's running over people. Like, he's a fun freaking Saints player to watch.
Yeah, I mean, if it was any other NFL team, I would pick Jimmy Graham going to them. But if it's the Falcons, then I pick Palin.
Okay, here's another one. Let me see this. Okay, how many first-round picks, Andrew, would you trade for Harbaugh – if you got to choose his job, and what is the job? And the favorite movie for Harold Ramis, which we'll get to in a second, is Groundhog Day.
So, I mean, it doesn't have to be a job in the NFL?
No, it can be any job. Like, you can.
Okay. How about, can I pick Jerry Sandusky's cellmate?
That's a
job. Is that a job or not really?
I would trade 3 first round picks for Jim Harbaugh, and I would make him clean the cat boxes in my house.
I would pick.
You drive a mini and you have cats.
Yeah, yeah.
I would pick the janitor to Jerry Sandusky's cell, and I would give up. I would give up 2 first round picks for that.
Kevin.
Let's see.
The question was by the Angry Ocho, by the way. Thanks.
Oh.
Thanks, Angry Ocho.
I'd give up a 4th round pick just to have him come clean my house once a week.
See, but I'd like to – like a former NFL coach having to clean a cat box is more humiliating, and I hate Jim Harbaugh, so you added. But like having to clean your bathroom is probably just disgusting.
I mean, it's not too bad, but basically – like, he'd be cleaning the house, and I would follow him from room to room.
Yeah.
Just watching him. I wouldn't even say anything. I would just watch him.
That's kind of creepy.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it is. And then, basically, I would be the exact opposite, like, of him. He's probably yelling at people, you know, screaming, flipping out, and I'm just watching him. Like, I'm trying to stay poker face the whole time. Like, just him ask, just, he does stuff. He's trying to like scrub my bathtub, and I'm just standing there, just watching him, arms folded. I've got my windbreaker zipped up, my hat down. He can barely see my eyes.
The pelicans are getting killed, my wife says. Right. Andrew, this is actually a serious football question, which is rare for our listeners. Who would be your fantasy free agent signing for the Saints this year? And Ghostbusters is his favorite Harold Ramis movie. Thanks, Alfredo. Fantasy, and it can be complete fantasy, or it can be realistic of who you would want the Saints to sign in free agency.
Well, I mean, the best free agent's Greg Hardy, but my pick would be Brent Grimes, just because.
Oh my god!
I've seen him play for so many years. He's older now, but he was amazing even last year this past year with the Dolphins, and I've just seen him play the Saints twice a year for so long, and. That guy's just a playmaker. He jumps on the ball. He is a prototype baller of a corner. And to have him on the other side of Keenan Lewis would just be tasty.
He might be a guy – before Kevin, I'll let you answer this question. He might be a guy, Andrew. Remember this past year, Paul Kruger, he ended up going to Cleveland. And they asked him, it was like, who were the other teams?
No relation to Freddie.
Exactly. That would have been fun costume for crazy New Orleans fans, though. They got him. But – they asked him, they're like, what other team was really going hard after you? And he was like, oh, the Saints. And we were like, what? Cleveland gave him $40 million over five. What? What? How did Mickey Loomis come up with that? Like, Brett Grimes could be a guy where the Saints, like Mickey Loomis might work the cat magic. And he could be a guy, like, if his contract, because he's old, if it's not completely fucking insane, like, it's like the 15% chance.
I mean, he's my fantasy for sure.
And Kevin, you're the guy that you would want the Saints to sign.
Well, since you didn't put any restrictions like, you know, current player.
Oh yeah. I want Jesus Christ to play
Brown.
Tackle.
I want Jim Brown.
Jim. Well, there you go.
I want to convert Marcus Colston's hyperbaric chamber into a time machine, go back in time, get Jim Brown, and put him on the Saints.
Somebody that doesn't involve time travel?
Yeah, I'm just going to defer to Andrew on that one. Again, hard-hitting analysis, and just go with Brent Grimes.
Brent Grimes. I'm going to go with
You say Julian Edelman, I swear to God.
No, I'm going to say this is a little bit convoluted, but I'm going to say my fantasy would be Dallas cuts DeMarcus Ware, and he takes a one-year deal to reunite with Rob Ryan. That would be my fantasy.
Interesting.
A guy.
That's not out of the realm of possibility, is it?
No, I mean if Dallas would cut him, he's been banged up the last couple of years. I could see him saying, you know what? I'm going to take a one-year deal with the Saints because I want to win.
No, I mean there's chatter that the Cowboys might cut him,
yeah.
Though, right?
You know, I think. Well, the Cowboys cap is a fucking. It's a fucking disaster. Like It's like. I mean, whoever does their cap, I don't know if Jerry Jones does the cap or his son or whatever, but that person needs to be fired because they have. It's just a fucking. Like I read about it, and I was like, it's like. They need to go on overthecap.com and like take a course on like how to do it, because it's a mess. Let's see if we have one more question. No, I think that's all the question we have. All right, look. Okay, one more. Moby, this is from Moby. Andrew, am I a real Saints fan if Sean Payton's puckered face and Jimmy Graham's first down annex irk me?
Are you a Saints fan if they irk you? I think you're not. I think you can't allow those things to irk you. You know, I mean, on some level that there was stuff Shockey did that annoyed me, so I judge you. But it's funny. When I kind of complained about right before the Seattle playoff game, I picked up a lot of Seahawks followers, and there was a Seahawks blog that was retweeting a lot of my posts and or tweets, I should say. And you know, I said some negative stuff about Pete Carroll and
Truther.
Truther. And then all these Seahawks fans out of the woodwork just came and were blasting me about Sean Payton. And it made me realize it's like I guess I've just been blind all these years or naive into thinking like, oh, Sean Payton's awesome. Like how could you not love him? But he actually has a pretty big disdain across the league. And same goes with Jimmy Graham. I mean, I was reading an article the other day about Jimmy Graham, and I was reading the comment section, and so much of it was other fans of teams, particularly Seahawks fans, bashing him. About that pregame pushing thing. So those two guys are kind of hated by at least the Seahawks fans and possibly some others out there. So, yeah, I mean, it made me realize that those guys, you know, I turn a blind eye or I've never really noticed it before. And I don't really see how anyone could hate them, but apparently people do. So yeah. You're not alone.
Kevin, are you a true Saints fan if those things irk you?
You should feel a little guilt.
Yeah. You should feel guilty, but you're still a Saints fan. I mean
going apeshit after a 15-yard game is kind of like, I'm like, really? Really? You know, it just doesn't like not like I'm an old guy like don't do that in NFL. It's like, do you really like? It was a 12-yard pass, Jimmy. Come on.
Here's the thing. You remember Junior Gillette's sack on Cam Newton when he did the Superman stomp? Every Saints fan was like, oh, my God, that's the most awesome thing I've ever seen. Every Panthers fan was thinking, oh, I hate that guy.
Yeah, that is true. But it was awesome.
That was awesome. So, I think on some level you have to have some kind of blind faith and loyalty towards your guys. But like I said, Shockey always got under my skin a little bit, so I think you get a little leeway with that.
Yeah. This past week, I think it was, Monday, Harold Ramis, the famous director, writer, comedy guy, SCTV, if you're a comedy nerd from back in the 70s, he did movies like Ghostbusters, and he wrote and directed Caddyshack. He wrote freaking Animal House and Groundhog Day and Stripes. Did I mention Meatballs already? That too. Like, Kevin, I love Harold Ramis. Like, of my top five movies, Caddyshack and Groundhog Day are in them. So I was usually like a celebrity does. I'm like, you're sad for like 5 seconds. I'm like, whatever. But like Harold Ramis, I was like, oh, Harold Ramis, man, Egon from Ghostbusters. So like,
right.
What is your favorite Harold Ramis movie?
Well, I think part of the reason that his death like hits a lot of us so hard is because we sort of came of age or grew up watching the stuff that he did over and over and over again. I mean, I've seen Ghostbusters countless times. I've seen Caddyshack countless times. I've seen Stripes a bunch.
Meatballs is great too, but it's not on cable because it has a lot of titties, and they have to chop it up, so they can't really put it on.
But Meatballs, underrated movie.
It is.
Underrated comedy. And again, it's because you don't see it a lot.
Ralph just said titties.
Oh, I guess half the people on Canal Street Chronicles are going to be upset now because we said the word titties.
Fuck. So you can just do this
there we go.
In the comment.
Yeah, so, I mean, shoot. If I had to pick – and you see, that's the problem if you had to pick a favorite movie because
– You can pick two.
Okay. I think Groundhog Day is overall a better film. Like, if I was trying to show somebody, show me why Bill Murray is beloved, show me why Harold Ramis was a great director or a great writer or who could understand how to put together a story and all that kind of stuff, I would show Groundhog Day.
I feel like Groundhog Day, Kevin, if it was released today, would be even bigger because of the internet and probably, depending on how strong that year's best picture and actors and stuff, I feel like that's a movie that could have won stuff for the – but back in 1990, we didn't have the internet and all this, so it was like, oh, that's a cool movie. But like,
right.
Like, I feel like if it was released now, you'd be talking about like Bill Murray getting nominated, him getting nominated, maybe nominated for Best Picture. Like, I feel like it's that good.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. I mean, I'm sure Bill Murray would get passed over anyway, and we'd cut to Bill Murray just holding back his disdain for the whole thing. But you know, whatever. He'd still get nominated, which is
Bill
what
Murray
he deserves.
He doesn't have a cell phone. He has if you want to call him, it's an 800 number that you call, and he calls you back.
That's great. He's phenomenal.
But
if we're talking Harold Ramis movie that you could watch, like if you're with a group of people and they're like, oh, what do you want to watch? Ghostbusters.
Oh.
The original Ghostbusters. Because the idea that Dan Aykroyd had was so vastly different from what ended up being on the film, and Harold Ramis deserves a lot of credit for helping, you know, with the writing on all that.
Ghostbusters could have been fucking ridiculous and terrible. Like,
yeah,
it just
yeah, and you know, maybe because everybody had played a role in making it so phenomenal. Like, you know, you hear like or you read like the oral history of Ghostbusters, and Bill Murray was improvising like so much shit, and Harold Ramis, you know, like all the guys were doing so much different things. They all brought different things to the table. But, I mean, for God's sakes, man, You've got the Twinkie speech.
That's a big
The Twinkie speech plus print is dead. I collect spores, molds, and fungus. And I mean, fungus. I mean, and you could argue that the best line he ever had as Egon was actually in Ghostbusters 2 when he says, "Let's see what happens when we take away the puppy." I mean, good Lord. I mean that, like,
that's what Michael Vick said.
Boo. Boo. I mean, that's like his whole character was a distinct look.
Yeah.
Like that character in itself was a look. I mean, Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd just look like two schlubs. I mean, Ernie Hudson just, you know, looked like a schlub, just looked like a guy.
Yeah.
Like they all just look like guys, but you know, fucking Egon, like that. Like if you said, "Yeah, I'm the guy's name is Egon." Yeah, that's what an Egon looks like.
Yeah, and the thing is, like he played it in such a way where, like, it was he was kind of made it kind of believable that, like, oh yeah, this guy, he's serious about spores and fungus and ghosts, and he's, you know, got this, like, he's like such a good straight man, but. Andrew, your favorite two Harold Ramis movies? Is Andrew with us?
Yeah, I'm here. Sorry, I got cut off for a second.
Pondering?
No, I got cut off for a second. What was the question?
Your favorite two favorite Harold Ramis movies, and you can rank them or not.
Well, I'm gonna throw this one out. I don't know that it's my favorite, but I just have an appreciation for this one because I've always kind of hated Billy Crystal. And, you know, just any movie that Billy Crystal's in, I kind of automatically write off. But Analyze This was a movie that he did. And he actually made the impossible task of making him remotely funny. So I have a lot of respect for him for actually turning Billy Crystal into something even remotely watchable. But there's a scene. Yeah, there's a scene in that movie where Billy Crystal's character is told, you know, hey, okay, I'm taking you to meet the mob. You just need to be as vague as possible. You know, don't say anything. You know, just stay out of everyone's way. And if anyone asks you questions, just be very vague. So, you know, he immediately comes in like he owns the place and he's like, did you talk to the guy? What guy? The guy with the thing. What thing? What the fuck are you talking about? And so it's just that scene is hilarious. And, you know, he was the creator of that. So props for that one. But I got to go Caddyshack.
Oh, dude.
Yes. Come on. The Caddyshack is just the instant classic. And anyway, so I mean, those two are memorable moments for me.
Hey, you know, and I had a bone to pick with the guy at Grantland, Wesley Morris. He wrote a glowing a nice piece about Harold Ramis, but he said something horrible about Caddyshack. He said Caddyshack had no plot. They had plot.
Fuck off.
Danny was trying to get the scholarship, man.
Right.
That was the plot. You know, it wasn't Gone with the Wind or nothing, but it was a plot. Danny, don't you want to be?
Hey, going back real quick to Canal Street Chronicles comments getting mad about. Did something happen? Did I miss something?
They just,
are they mad about profanity or something?
There's certain people that are always mad about the profanity, and yet they keep listening. And I don't understand, like, what don't you get? Like we say fuck, like as soon as the Pelican House ad is over, we're dropping 4-letter bombs. Like it's what we do.
Yeah,
and that's probably going to cost me any shot of getting a job with the NOLA Media Group.
Did you really apply for that?
Yes, I did.
What if
the job is to be Jeff Duncan's lapdog?
Let me just tell you this. If to use a quote from Ghostbusters, if there's a steady paycheck involved, I will believe anything you say.
Let me tell you something, NOLA News Group. I know whatever Gladlow and other people listen to this podcast. I know they do. Hire this man, Kevin Held. He can web produce the shit out of stuff.
And he's better than anything you got.
That's exactly right. Exactly right. I know they listen, Kevin. I know they do. So they should hire you. Hire you. You are more than capable than whatever they have in the pile of resumes that they've got.
God, I hope so.
Oh, yeah. My wife wants to pick a Harold Ramis movie.
All right. Did you put Sean Orleans or Kevin Held at the top
I put Kevin Held.
Kevin Orleans. He will powerbomb Nola.com to the top. My wife.
Well, I tell you what, man. If there's a ladder match involved for the final candidates, I think I've got a leg up on that.
You're a lock. My wife wants to pick a favorite Harold Ramis movie. She said Christmas Vacation. Regular vacation. Regular Vacation is good, but
they don't have shit on Caddyshack. Come on.
But Christmas Vacation holds up better in the vacation movies. But Caddyshack is, if you were like, you get to watch one more movie before you die, I'm picking Caddyshack. If you're sending me to a desert island and I have to bring one movie, I'm bringing Caddyshack. Like, Caddyshack is. If you have testicles, my wife says maybe, but there are other movies. Groundhog Day 2 is just.
Well, but you drive a mini, so you don't have any.
See, that's probably. Burn! It's true. My wife just went, and my wife nodded. I love, like, I'm gonna rewatch Groundhog Day this week. I love that movie. It's like, do you ever have deja vu, Alice? I don't know. I'll have to check with the chef. It's just like so good, but and the thing is, like, the thing that horrifies
too early for flapjacks.
What's the soup du jour?
The thing that horrifies
that's the soup of the day.
Is they're gonna remake Groundhog Day?
No.
Eventually they will. They were thinking about doing a musical of it. They're eventually going to remake it, and it's going to be fucking terrible. It's going to be fucking terrible. The Pelicans got roasted. Monty Williams needs to get fired.
Yeah, he really does.
And that's just the bottom line.
I mean, the Pelicans ruin everything. They've already ruined CP3.
Yeah.
They're in the process of ruining Anthony Davis. They keep employing Monty Williams. They've already ruined Pierre the Pelican. Now there's talk they're gonna axe King Cake Baby. I mean, they ruin everything.
What? They're gonna axe King Cake Baby?
There's chatter that this may be his last year.
My wife's face is just stunned. She's gonna cry. She loves the King Cake Baby. She thinks he's adorable. With them big scary eyes and like they can't get rid of King Cake Baby, dude. What are they – like, the King Cake Baby is one of their awesome things. I mean, God damn it.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like the only acceptable farewell to King Cake Baby is for him to do some sacrilegious thing like the Sinead O'Connor Pope picture scenario. I mean, I feel like that's the only ceremonious departure that could work for me. Otherwise they can't. I mean, he's kind of got that little child's play Chucky thing going.
It does. It just, like,
you know, and look, let's be serious here. Evil and creepy is the only thing the Pelicans franchise has going on right now.
It does. I wonder if Tom, I mean, they just gave him all extensions, but I wonder if Tom Benson be like, fuck you people. Y'all are ruining this. I'm firing all of you motherfuckers. I mean, he did it with we make fun of, but like Benson, he'll shit can people. He did it with the same, like he's not afraid to do it, you know. So, and he's getting he's not like Benson. Like, I know people give him shit and all this post Katrina, but to me, like, he's a great owner that he leaves the fucking Saints alone. Like Mickey, you know, like Benson isn't like meddling with Mickey Loomis or Sean Payton, and like. Eventually, Benson's not going to be around. Hopefully, he'll live 5-10 more years. But eventually, somebody's going to fucking buy the Saints, and they're going to be worth $1 billion. They're going to have to pay $1 billion for it. And they might want to fuck it all up to hell like Daniel Snyder. So,
God.
You know?
Well, look, hopefully Rita, Benson, LeBlanc, or maybe it'll be her kids by that time. Hopefully, they won't sell it to some Napoleonic shithead.
Yeah. Well, I enjoyed your rant about the Pelicans, Andrew. So I guess that about – Kevin, do you have a wrestling update for us before we get out of here?
Let's see. I'm battling pink eye, so hopefully pink eye –
You got the Bob Costas Sochi pink eye?
Yep. Hopefully that'll be gone before next weekend because that's when I'm supposed to wrestle in St. Louis. Pink eye for the straight guy. Actually, I put that on my Facebook page. Thank you very much. Yeah, hashtag.
Hashtag blood red.
I haven't really been able to train lately. I went to Tennessee last weekend before the pink eye showed up.
How long of a drive is that?
4 hours.
Oh, that's not too bad.
No. 4 hours there, 4 hours back.
That's not terrible. I thought it was longer than that.
Well, yeah. You're going there. You're going there, and it's still light out, so you got that. But then when you leave, you're leaving at like 11 o'clock at night, and then it's pitch ass black on the highway. And then when you get to the interstate, there's a little bit of light, and then you go through. You go through stretches of I-55 where there's nothing. So trying to, stay awake and focused is a chore. Thank God there were other guys in the car and they were just, talking to me and just shooting the shit. Helped keep me awake.
Do we have an LSU basketball update, Ralph?
They were winning by 14. God damn it, Andrew. You had to bring up Saturday. Jesus Christ. LSU was right there for them. They could have beat Kentucky and been an 11 seed in the NCAA tournament. I thought they fucking had it, and they didn't finish. LSU basketball is nothing but disappointment.
This basketball season for Louisiana has just been the worst.
It's awful. It's going to be another year where Louisiana has no teams in the tournament.
Yep.
So before we get out of here, Andrew – go to Canal Street Chronicles and leave the podcast and leave a comment about how we curse too much. Andrew, you have a piece on Zach Strief's potential value on Saints Nation. What else do you have going on?
That's a good question. Free is about to wrap up, so I'm going to be covering that every day. I actually just finished a mock draft after the combine.
Who'd you have the Saints picking?
Well, I had Calvin Pryor actually falling to them at 27. So get ready for your second straight safety picked in the first round by the Saints. So that was my pick. My first round pick in the previous one was Zach Martin, the tackle of Notre Dame. But I was feeling more confident that Zach Strief is going to be re-signed. So now I'm thinking outside the box. Nice. So anyway, Pryor is my pick this time. But we'll see. We'll see how it develops.
And Kevin, you gave us the wrestling update, and you're going to do a power poll before the end of the year or not?
Yeah, probably not. I don't know. I'm trying to sell a guy on some white wall tires, and then after that, I'm trying to help some of these younger guys that I'm actually training with, trying to help them come up with wrestling names and what to call their finishing moves and entrance music. So I'm trying to help them with important decisions. And I'm acting like an older brother because
Max on the ladies.
Yeah.
Older than everybody.
Are you still macking on the ladies?
Yes, I am. I'm still finding time to mack on the ladies when the pink eye isn't killing me and when I'm not practicing in a wrestling ring. Yes, I am macking on ladies.
Hey, baby. Do you want to get some pink eye?
Well, what's a more effective pickup, Kevin? Is it the pink eye or is it the scarf that you wear during the wrestling matches?
The lady I'm seeing, she loves the hell out of the fact that I wear a scarf to the ring because she knows everybody hates it. It plays. The scarf plays, man.
All right.
People hate a guy.
Kevin, do you have a smoking jacket that you wear with the scarf?
So not such a fan of the pink eye then.
No, she does not like the fact that I have to sequester myself.
You're in quarantine?
Yeah.
So
she wants to shop on aisle Kevin and she can.
Well. So on that note.
There we go.
Yeah. I need sound effects at my fingertips. So people remember, you need to donate. I need to do this at the beginning of the show because I don't know how many people listen to the end. But go to chronicpodcast.podbean.com and donate, even if you donate a dollar, so we can keep the good audio, so we can keep Kevin on Match.com, so we can –
And so Ralph can buy a new car.
So I can buy a new car and so that Kevin can get antibiotics for his pink eye. Like, there's so many things that you could do if you would just donate right. $2-$3 a month.
Right. Andrew's kid needs tennis lessons.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. True.
Exact
fact.
Dave needs to hire a private chef.
Exactly. Dave living his pampered life.
Fucking foodie.
Yeah. So on that note, I'm Ralph Marlboro for Kevin Held, a.k.a. Sean Orleans, and Andrew Juge. So long. Until next week.
Hire this man. Hire him now.